Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode 69. Getting closer to number 70, which is closer to number 100, which will be a big festival of celebration. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me here is Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing today, Stephen?
I'm doing great. It's a nice sunny evening here. It's Wednesday evening. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving in the United States. So for those of you who are spending the evening before your holiday with us, we appreciate you taking the time. Or if you're listening to us later in the archives, we appreciate that, too. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Now, here's a little note. We're actually not live tonight. This is a brand new episode with a first-time guest, so keep listening. But we are pre-recording this because of the holiday, and we'll be gone the night that this is airing. So keep listening. We will be monitoring Twitter, so... don't call in. The phone lines, nobody here to answer them.
So, Whoopi likes her bacon crispy. The print books are out there pre-ordering right now, and pre-order sales are quite brisk. I saw some numbers last night that made me fall off the couch. I got up, looked at the numbers again, fell off again. It's doing great, especially it's a large size book, and the hardcover is case laminate. It's an 8.5 by 8.5 book. Full color inside and everything. And he's selling ebooks like crazy. He's selling soft covers. And I saw some very nice numbers for hardcover books. Now, a lot of people aren't that interested in publishing in hardcover. Like, for example, if you're publishing a novel, you're probably not going to sell a lot of hardcovers because they're more expensive, but they're a nice prestigious thing to have. They look good on the table during a book signing. Of course, if you got special people you want to give a copy to, you want to give your best possible one. But everybody, if you're not publishing in hardcover, think about it. If the kind of book you've got seems like it could have some appeal to the hardcover audience out there, you might want to give it a try. But anyway, that's Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy. Get out there and order your copy now.
Yeah. All right. Girl Wears Those Shoes by Jenny Wong. Pre-sale ebooks are everywhere now, and hard and soft covers are showing up at retailers like Amazon today. So get over to... our Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel and check out the video on that one.
Girl Wears Those Shoes.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengies.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Now, what Beam just said about Girl Wears Those Shoes, ditto for Joshua Stutzman's From Chaos with Love. It's a collection of 220 poems, and boy, these are cool, excellent poems. It is also in pre-sale now. You can order your ebooks, and the print copies, both hardcover and softcover, are populating at various retailers. I believe yesterday is when it showed up at Amazon, so get out there and get your copy of that. Now, while we're recording, we're seeing them popping up. By the time you're listening to this, they should be everywhere. Unless, of course, you're listening to this show in the archives, in which case, what are you waiting for? Get out there and order your copy now. And by the way, we have a cool video for this, too. So get over to that Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube and watch the video for Joshua Stutzman's From Chaos with Love.
Yeah, and Patricia A. Guthrie's Legacy of Danger is scaring up some buzz. It's now in full release everywhere in time for the holidays. This also has a video. Fresh Ink Group on YouTube, and grab a few copies. They make great gifts.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
The book, There Must Be Something in the Water, is in progress right now. We started the publication, I believe it was yesterday. So the ebooks should be appearing by the time you're hearing this broadcast, and I think the print books should be mostly populated by then too. That's There Must Be Something in the Water. It's a very cool book. This is written by the wife of the president of the University of Alabama at Huntsville, and it's about 42 descendants of slaves from backwater, low country, Green Pond, South Carolina. And these 42 individuals, despite having very little economic and cultural opportunities, went on to achieve some very great things, like president of a university. It's a very cool book. It's full of pictures from the area, pictures of all the people, local quotes, translations of when they say this, what does it really mean, and a lot of fun stuff. So check that out. There Must Be Something in the Water, going into pre-sale this week. Now, we're making the video for it, so we can't send you to YouTube yet, but by next week, there should be one over there to check out for that as well.
Yes. And the Ort Federation to the Stars, the Second Ort Chronicle by Robert G. Williscroft, should be in presale in about a week. Follow-up, this is the follow-up to Icicle, a Tensor Matrix. Check the newsletter. There will be info on, in it about that. And get over to the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel. You've never heard that before. We have a video.
Funny that.
Yeah.
So we got a great guest today. We have really been looking forward to talking to this fellow. We've known him and known about him and have admired him for many, many years. Nicholas C. Rossis. He likes to call himself the dream protecting author. He lives to write, which he does from his cottage on the edge of a magical forest in Athens, Greece. When not composing children's book, epic fantasies, or short sci-fi stories, he chats with fans and colleagues, supports his fellow authors, writes blog posts, walks his dog, and enjoys the antics of two silly cats and his baby daughter, all of whom claim his lap as home. Welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Hi, guys.
Welcome.
Really good to be here. And I'm thankful in the spirit of the holidays. Thankful to be here. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Yeah, we were looking forward to this one, Nicholas. We've been meaning to get you on since we started this show. I had interviewed you on the old show at the old book club, and just always a good, entertaining interview you are.
Oh, thank you very much, guys.
So you're in Athens now. Is that where you're from? Is this where you grew up or nearby?
I am in Athens, and it is where I grew up, born and bred. But I also lived many years in Edinburgh, Scotland. So that probably is responsible for the weird accent that you hear here, which is an amalgam of many different things. Although I can probably do it better. I can probably do a better Scottish accent if I put my mind to it. But I'm not going to even try that because I'm going to be right to do so.
So what was it like growing up there? What was your childhood like?
It was very weird because my parents did like the outdoors, I suppose, and we lived in a place that, like literally in the middle of the forest, there was pretty much no one and nothing around us. People joked that we lived near the wolves, and not literally, but figuratively for sure. We had a lot of foxes, for example. But the interesting thing about it is it's, well, you know, Greece is steeped in history. So anywhere you look, you're going to find something historical about it. And that gives birth to a lot of stories. Like I always say, there is a story behind everything. I mean, you lift a rock in Greece, and there's going to be a story about that rock and about what you find underneath that. And you can probably write a book about that. So it's that kind of place. I mean, we are near Akali, that's northern suburbs of Greece, and I recently found out that Akali is actually, you have a story behind that. So you have the mythical hero Theseus, and he's supposed to go to Marathon, which is literally 20 minutes away from here, and nowadays or by car, but back then you had to walk a fair distance from the center of Athens. So he was sent to Marathon to kill a bull that was apparently devastating the crops there, or whatever. So he starts on his merry way, and then nightfall falls and he found himself in the middle of the forest, middle of the halfway there to Marathon, and he finds a little hut and an old lady living there. So the old lady's name is Ekali, and he spends the night there. Then he goes to Marathon, kills a bull, and on his way back, he wants to share the happy news, but he finds the old lady has sadly passed away. So he names that place after her, and that place 2,000 years later, or maybe even more, because I don't know how old that myth is, so probably 3,000 years old or something, you still live near a place called Ekali to this day. But like I said, everything has a story here.
Yeah, what a great story. Everything there, too, seems to be a beautiful view. I always think of Greece as like the land of the screensavers, because any direction you point a camera and click, you're going to have a spectacular shot. So what's it like where you're living now? What kind of view do you have, and what's your place look like?
They say that you are never further away than a couple of hours from the sea in Greece, and that's certainly the truth. I mean, we live up in the mountains, but we are like 20 minutes away from the sea. So it depends on where you point that camera. We have a lovely lake nearby, which is beautiful. It has Harrods and stuff. It's just awesome. We have, well, the forest. We have deer. I mean, the other day I took a bunch of pictures. My daughter is not so much of a baby now that she's six. She was feeding deer, and that was really beautiful to watch. And 20 minutes away, you have the tomb of the Marathon battle, which was between the ancient Athenians and the Persians, in the first invasion of Persia. That was like 500 BC, I think, roundabouts. And they gathered all the dead from that big battle, and they buried them there, and they have this mound, which is absolutely beautiful, and you can visit. And it's just another spectacular sight. Again, like I said, everywhere you look, it's ridiculous. There was a fire. Actually, we had problems with wildfires ever since I remember.
Yeah.
Living in the forest, you have that. And of course, I suppose climate change doesn't help with that. So we had a wildfire this year. So there is a bit of that near us. But the funny thing about it is a friend of mine was helping out. He was a volunteer. He was helping out with the fire department. And as he was running through the wood, he stepped into something and he sort of fell down. And he looked down and he realized that there was something shining in the hole in the ground. So he marked the place, and after the fire, he went back with some people from the archaeology department, and they realized he had just found a grave with some offerings inside and gold stuff, you know. That's what
wow.
Like I said, it's ridiculous. It's, you throw a stone and you find something.
Well, Greece is such an ancient country, an ancient region, and man, the history there is, like you just said, you can be running along and stumble upon a story, stumble upon history. I find that fascinating.
Yeah. It really is. It really is. Or a story hits you on the head, depending on, we joke that if you're building a house, the last thing you want to find as you're digging for the foundations is any antiquities, because then you have to wait for the archaeology department to show up. And that could take decades. So basically, you can't build anything there. So, we pray that we don't find any antiquities.
Yeah. So what kind of dog do you have?
She's a bit of a mongrel. She's a rescue. All our dogs have been rescues ever since I can remember. I think throughout my life, I've probably met some 40 dogs. So this one is the newest addition to the family. She's called Easy, which I always call her the great misnomer because she's anything but. She's very energetic, very happy-go-lucky, and she loves to jump on you, which is great until you realize that she's the right sort of height to, how do I put this gently, to make sure that you don't have any children. Is that a good way of putting it? every time you show up through the door, you have to literally run for cover. It's like a self-guided missile coming at you.
Are the cats rescues too?
Yeah, absolutely. The cat was actually the two cats we had before. They were rescues. One of them followed us when we moved to this place from quite nearby when we came back from Edinburgh. The other one was left behind by some neighbors, and we took care of her, not him. But they both passed away sadly a couple of years ago. So now we have a new cat, a black cat, whose his name is Boo, because he literally hides in the shadows and you don't see him because he's all black, of course. And then suddenly he opens his eyes and he's like, boo, and you're like, ah, what happened there? So that's Boo for you. And he's a darling. He's absolutely adorable, actually. He's the fluffiest thing I've ever seen, just silky hair. Beautiful. And she's a rescue too. During the wildfires, we got a bit scared. So we were not here. We were in another place in Evia, an island outside of Athens at the time, holidaying. And Alexa turned to me and said, if Boo, he was still living in the street back then. And she said, if Boo makes it and nothing bad happens, we're going to adopt him. I was like, yeah, sure. That works for me. So he's now officially adopted by us. And I think he's happy.
All right. So you lived in, you're living in this amazing place, Greece. What took you to Scotland?
Studies mostly. I mean, I met with my wife, Electra, when we were both kids, I suppose, and we went to study together abroad. And we wanted to go to the UK, mainly because of the language. I was very familiar with the language. She was not so much because she had gone to a French school, so her first language is French, as it happens. As I always say, as a joke, she's culturally French, or at least half French, half Greek and half English, so Scottish. So, again, not very good at math, but works out somehow. So we sent our resumes, but we sent our file to a number of bunch of universities in the UK, and we were accepted in Cardiff and Edinburgh. So we decided to go to Edinburgh. And it was beautiful. It was amazing. Those are really formative years for both of us. And I think we both miss it so much. Try to go back as much as we can. It's an absolutely beautiful place, beautiful people.
Yeah.
And we had a lovely time there.
And also steeped in history.
Pardon?
Also steeped in history, too. Edinburgh. There's so many
absolutely.
Things there. Historical.
Absolutely.
Importance. The buildings, the churches.
Ghosts.
Ghosts? Okay.
Yeah, don't forget the ghosts. You have all the ghost tours. But also, like, literally, this is the funniest story ever there. I started my company, it's the media there, and that was back in 95. So now I'm showing my age. Yeah, okay. So that was back in 95. And a bunch of years later, I sold it. The first company, actually, was Electract. So I sold that to a Scottish guy. And they were running their own website development and what have you company. And I said, that was Andrew, okay? And Andrew had just bought a castle in the middle of nowhere, and it was a huge thing, but like 14 acres of land around it, a lake, a private lake, and what have you. It was beautiful. And I said, oh, this is so old. Surely it comes with ghosts, I joked. And he said, in a very serious tone, he said, yeah, we have two. We have the colonel, I think, or something, or, yeah, colonel. And the lady in white, but it's okay because they're friendly ghosts and we don't mind them too much. And I was like, okay, you're just pulling my leg now, Andrew, aren't you? And I said, no, seriously. The previous owners told us about them and they're there. And it's really frustrating because the castle is a listed building, which means you can't really change anything there. But that creates a bunch of problems because we can't have a TV antenna outside the building. So we put the TV antenna in the attic. And every night we put it in the place where we actually have a reception, but some of that seems to bother the ghosts. So every morning we find it in the opposite end of the attic, and it's really frustrating. I haven't been able to watch any TV since I moved into the bloody place. So that's Scots and their ghosts for you.
So, Beam, I think it's about time to run a couple of commercials, isn't it?
Sure.
Hello Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley, features photos, stories, and complete listings of the entertainers, athletes, political leaders, and others who visited the area since 1900. Chattanooga has attracted some of the best-known celebrities in the world, thanks to our city's historic venues, beautiful scenery, and powerful people. Hello Chattanooga features hundreds of restored photos, behind-the-scenes stories, and thousands of fully indexed entries spanning more than 700 pages. I'm David Carroll. I've worked in Chattanooga television and radio for more than 40 years. I also write a weekly newspaper column and have written two other books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, A Photo History of Chattanooga Media, and Volunteer Bama Dog, A TV Guy's Love Letter to the South, a collection of my most popular stories. Hello Chattanooga is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in a keepsake jacketed hardcover edition with full color interior printing, softcover with black and white photos, and all color ebook formats worldwide. Take a trip back in time, enjoy great memories, and maybe even settle an argument as you learn the dates and places that your favorite star, athlete, or president visited the Chattanooga area.
Every person has a private life and a secret self. This is true of those we know and people we only know because they are famous. Discover fascinating, intimate, clever, witty, poignant, insightful tales from a diverse roster of notable women who dare reveal both the unknown and the previously undisclosed. But these are not gossipy tales. No, they are personal, anecdotal, always meaningful stories for quiet reading, sharing aloud, even performing from the stage. Compiled by Detroit playwright Jay Ajluni, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy, 65 fascinating excerpts from the memoirs of famous and infamous women, is illustrated with whimsical portraits that capture these remarkable celebrities at their best. Choose your own from laminate hardcover, softback, and digital editions, all proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Come away with a richer appreciation of these talented women and smile for permitting them to entertain you in unexpected and delightful ways.
All right. So both those books are currently available. So get out there and grab copies of them for the holidays. Give them
both have, and both have videos over in our YouTube channel.
Yeah. Yes, they do. So, Nicholas, what kind of a childhood did you have? Were you a reader and a writer as a child, or is this something that you discovered later on?
I was definitely a reader, especially, like I said, growing up in the middle of nowhere, you didn't have any friends, so it was quite lonely. But every Friday, I would take maybe a dozen books from the school library, and I would return them on Monday, and I'd read all of them through the weekend. So definitely reading a lot. I was good for that. Yeah.
Cool.
The favorite place in the school was, the entire school was the library. Just went there every day and read a bit. I loved it, that place. Still good. I was very lucky to go to school that had a huge library too, so there is that.
Yeah, I always loved the library too. That was my favorite place. I don't think I ever read a dozen books over the weekend, but I'd read quite a few of them though.
Then you're lucky because you had a life during the weekend. So it's all good.
So as a child, you did a lot of reading. Now you're not living in the forest, so to speak. What other kinds of hobbies or pastimes do you have? How do you fill your time besides hanging out with the dog, the cat, your daughter?
Well, the daughter is, you know how they say the term money pit? She's a time pit. Here's when you're with her. She demands all your attention, so not really much free time there.
How old is she?
She's six now.
Six.
Which is a great age. But so far, every age has had its ups and downs, and she's been wonderful. I just love having her. And I just make the most of my time with her, to be honest, right now. I just enjoy her company so much. Apart from that, we do love to walk a bit, and just, you know, lockdowns have been hard for everyone, so it's been kind of weird. But on the other hand, I joke that lockdowns have been designed just for me, because I was pretty much living the same way since I work from home anyway, and I'm lucky enough to not have been affected terribly much by that. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Greece did go through some very strict lockdowns.
Yes.
I know the situation in the States has not necessarily been like that, but Natalie didn't go, that's the daughter, she didn't go to school for a lot of months last year, for many months. And then we managed to bring COVID cases down to like six a day, something like that. So the doctors have been very successful, but at a big toll, psychologically speaking. So then we took her and went to Lefkada, which is a beautiful island in the Ionian Sea, on the west coast of Greece, and that really did wonders for us. So I would say we'd love to travel, we'd love to do more of that. We, especially with Greece, there's something to see around every corner. And we love to spend time with each other. Really, that's it. Very, very family-oriented life, to be honest. And, of course, write. Both the missus and I, Alexia and I, we literally make a living writing right now. Just copywriting for a media company, an American media company. So we've both ended up doing that.
Now, we know that, you know, you started reading as a child. How long have you been writing? You know, serious writing. Because you've got numerous books that you've published, which we'll get to shortly.
I think that was back in 2009 that my first short story was published in a magazine, and I was actually paid for it. So about a couple of $100. So that was awesome. I was like, ooh, this is fun. I can do what I love and get paid. I didn't realize that could be a thing. So that was 2009. But it's kind of funny story before that, because when I was, I think, 17, I went to a counselor to help me out with, you know, what I wanted to do with my life. My father insisted that I became an engineer, and I didn't want to become an engineer. Just not my thing. So I ended up studying engineering and then getting a PhD in architecture, of all things, just to please my dad, essentially. But I ended up doing web design and web marketing and social media and all that thing, and then switched to writing. So got back to my story, 17 years old, so I go to that counselor, and I show her one of my short stories that I've been writing. And she says, you know, whatever you do, don't become a writer. This sucks, you know, this is really, yeah, okay. Don't give up a day job, or that sort of thing. So I didn't, like I said, I studied engineering and ended up doing different things. I was very keen in psychology as well, very interested in that. But so that was part of my thesis. But didn't do any writing. And then in 2009, I did that short story. And a couple of years later, I did a Greek translation of the Tao Te Ching, which is a Chinese book. I translated from the English translation of the Chinese, of course. Multiple translations, actually. It's the foundation of Taoism. And I found it fascinating. I absolutely love its philosophy. So I translated that. And then I sort of got into more writing. And I wrote my first children's book, Runaway Smile, which I wrote pretty much during a weekend. It was just like somebody was telling me the story. It was beautiful. So that got self-published in Greece first, in Greek. And that counselor, she got her hands on one of the copies. And she called me out of the blue, like 30 years later.
Wow.
She called me out of the blue and she said, I'm so happy that you became a writer. You know, I always knew that you'd become a great writer. This is a great book.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what the heck? What? And then it got even worse in a sense, because she turned to me and she said, and of course, you know what you write, what you wrote about, right? I said, I think so. What did I write about? I said, well, you wrote about a relationship between, how the relationship between the child and his mother is the most important relationship of their life. I was like, I'm not aware of writing about that, but she said, then you don't know what you're writing about. I was like, okay.
Oh, wow.
So that taught me two things. Never listen to people who tell you what you should and should be doing in your life. Just follow your passions. And the second one is leave it up to the reader to make sense of what you're writing, because you don't want to hear, you don't want to intervene with that process. Everybody reading your books is going to take something different away from them, and that's fine. Don't go around telling people what I was writing about.
Yeah, as long as it's worth 5 stars to them.
Yeah, I think that's a sign of a good writer, is when you've got multiple takes from different people, that it means this to one person and means that to another person. I think that's a sign of a good writer.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So what is your writing process like, Nicholas? Is this something you do a certain time each day? Do you set goals? Do you put flowers in your hair and burn incense? Do you have any kind of a routine? What's your writing like?
I haven't tried the incense thing or the flower thing, but that sounds kind of fun. I'm going to try that. Okay, I'll let you know. Make it clear that I don't do half as much fiction writing as I would like nowadays, simply because there is so much copywriting to be done that I spend the whole day pretty much. We both spend, the wife and I, we spend all of our day writing copy for like blog posts and web copy and sometimes marketing material, so taglines and ads and that sort of thing. When I have been lucky enough to have been approached a couple of times by people I admire, and they wanted to co-write a book. So Rain Hall is one of these people, and we ended up doing a book last year about copywriting, which of course now is sort of my area of expertise, along with book marketing. And we are thinking of doing another one this coming year, 2022, which I'm very much looking forward to. Apart from that, I ghost wrote a couple of stories and a couple of books. One was with a childhood friend, and we wrote Fear Begets Murder, which was a murder mystery, of course. And one of my short stories ended up in a collection called Hell's Mall. So I've been doing a bit of that, but I haven't done half as much fiction writing as I like to do, to be honest. And I kind of feel bad about that, but you do what you can. And what keeps Natalie happy, of course, with plenty of toys. She's going through the puzzle phase, and we buy a new puzzle like every other day.
Do you find it's helpful to shift gears like that? Like if you're writing copy, ads, blog posts, marketing material or whatever, and then when you do have the chance to shift and just go into a world of fiction, creating characters and things like that, is it an easy transition for you, or does it help to just kind of stick with one thing for a while?
I've been sticking with copywriting for a while now, a few years now, but I do love to write fiction. So every chance I get, I try to do that. But truth be told, I have the second installment of my Heaven for Toasters series. I love that series, and I would love to finish that second book one of these days, but somehow it doesn't seem to work that way. The book would not write itself, and I can't find the time to write it, because by the time I finish with copywriting, I'm just sort of burned out. I can't stare at the monitor for another second. All I want is just, you know, do something in the real world, it's like. And I find that hard. I find that hard to figure out when to write fiction right now. I hope that at some point I will manage to balance these two better. It helps when somebody approaches you with a project, an idea for a project like Wayne has. So when she comes and says, okay, let's do this. Here are my chapters. Here are your chapters. Get writing. That helps a lot, but I have to find somebody who does that with fiction writing, I think. So I did that with the ghostwriting project, but we'll see if another project like that comes along.
So, Beam, you want to roll a couple more commercials?
Sure.
Aspiring young Chinese immigrant, GGO, survives by working as a stripper. But she strives for true success in the U.S. real estate industry. Navigating this highly competitive business is tough, especially when her only support comes from the deeply flawed man she loves and her old cohorts from the strip club. Issues of betrayal and trust, loyalty and commitment complicate her goals, even as one lesbian friend adds new dimensions to her understanding of love versus desire. Then the market crashes and financial turmoil threatens to rob GGO of all she has achieved. Can she find new ways to chase her dreams and still manage to keep her clothes on? Or might she find a better reason to take them off? Girl Wears Those Shoes is a tale of love and power. The story of one woman who wants to make the world her own, if only she can figure out how. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Girl Wears Those Shoes is available in all hardcover, softcover, and all digital formats worldwide.
I'm in St. Louis, where the windmills turn, behind the fence where lifers yearn. I see tempers flare and souls burn. Walk the line, or it's your turn. It's funny how little things give us the greatest ambition. The differing shades of color throughout the day's sky. The slight smile and familiar aroma of a lover. The laugh of a child. In From Chaos with Love, Poetry from the Inside Out, this astounding collection of 220 original poems, Joshua Stutzman shares his vision of how we live day to day, often unaware of how many ways we affect those around us, family, friends, even strangers. In that, he finds a unique and poignant beauty, an exquisite appreciation for the wonder he hopes to share with his poetry. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, From Chaos with Love is the first collection from a man describing what we all know but find too easy to forget. From Chaos with Love, Poetry from the Inside Out by Joshua Stutzman.
And I'll bet we've got videos for those two books.
I'll bet. Those were both fun videos to make, too, especially the animation and that From Chaos with Love. That's a very cool video. And I like that background music, too.
Yeah. Kind of moody. Got a good tone, a good vibe to it.
So listeners, we're talking to Nicholas C. Rossis.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Nicholas has been kind enough to call in from Greece. So this is another international episode. Now, Nicholas, you know, we just touched on prior to the commercials, we touched on that you don't have as much time to write fiction as you would like. Would stories like Heaven for Toasters and Runaway Smile and the differences in these kind of genres that you write, where, when you do have the opportunity, where do your ideas come from for writing these stories?
Mostly reading, of course, and dreams. I have a very vivid dream life, and I keep a dream journal next to my bed, and that's been a source of inspiration for many a scene in my books, as it happens. And in fact, a few of my short stories are verbatim copied from the dream I had. Just need to tweak a bit and tweak a little bit here and there and publish it. It's a beautiful process when it works.
Is that where you get the dream protecting author tag?
Oh, no, that's completely different. When I published my books, I was so excited because I was like, oh, I'm going to publish a book, so I'm now an author and I'm going to have thousands of people reading my books. And then I realized that, no, that's not how it works. You really need to market and promote your books. And when you do that right, it can be awesome, but it's really hard to do right. Book marketing is really hard when you have to compete against, I don't know, I think the number is a bit over 6,000 books a day are being published on Amazon alone. So it can get a bit overwhelming for a reader, and you need somehow to reach those readers. So that's where guys like you come, are invaluable to authors, because you offer that very, very valuable service, book marketing. And I realized that we are authors. We have dreams of people reading our books and reaching out to an audience. But then these dreams get crushed by the harsh reality that it's really hard to reach that audience. It's really hard to put your books in the hands of readers. And that's where book marketing comes in. And a lot of my blog deals with book marketing. So I'm trying to protect the dreams of these authors by exposing any scammers effectively out there. So people who say that we're going to promote your book, but they don't need to do anything, they just take your money. And we all hate that. Sharing tips and ideas and whatever I found out about book marketing, I put it on my blog. The other half is about helping writers become better writers. So I share a lot of things that I find fascinating, like historical tidbits and anecdotes. So, you know, why do we find that spelling ye, for example, on pubs? What is that? Was ye actually used as the at some point in history? Or I shared a story the other day about Stone Age clothes. And, you know, a lot of fantasy writers have people living in situations where they don't have access to modern technology. So what would people wear? Would they wear wool, linen? And it turns out that, at least in the Stone Age, people use something completely different. They would take the bark from a tree and press it into fibers. So there is that, and the story about that. And or I shared a story about the Cossack sorceress. It turns out there was a bunch of Cossack sorcerers in the Black Sea who were in the Ukraine, actually, who had formed the Magical Warrior Society of Ukraine. What do you know? You know, we've heard of Dangers and Shaolin, but never about that. So it's all things of interest to readers and writers, especially published authors who are trying to promote their books or who are looking for inspiration for their ideas.
Yeah.
So as you can, go ahead.
I was just going to say exposing the scammers. Any author, we all get those. They're sending us DMs on Twitter or Instagram, or sending us emails. Hey, I can promote your book to 150,000 of our followers. Then you go over there and they've got like 23 followers. Okay, well, where are the 150,000 followers coming from? But they just want $85 for it, you know?
Oof.
Yeah.
I had run at some point they called a survey, I suppose, which was I was asking people to share their experience, writers share their experiences with book promoters, and I published the results, and it turns out that there are some really good ones. Little Book Club is pretty famous, of course, and for good reason, but they're asking for so much money that it's really hard to make or at least break even. And there were some others that they were asking for way too much money for just very few sales. At the end of the day, that's not what you want. Nowadays, I advertise mostly on Amazon itself and Facebook, usually go with one or the other. And I promote my free days on some other channels, but these change quite frequently. It's really hard, and it's like building on quicksand, you know? You get one really good book promoter for a while, and then something happens, and you either fail to deliver after a while, or they just vanish, and they're not even available anymore. I don't know what happens there. It seems to be that things change every 6 months in our area, and in our line of work, and I guess that's something we need to get used to.
Yeah, every time one of those book promoters vanishes, there's a van that says Simon and Schuster on it, spotted in the area. You got to watch out.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I also don't know what happened.
So, Nicholas, do you use beta readers, editors? Are you an outliner? How do you get your material from your ideas onto finished form, ready to show the world?
I'm not much of an outliner. I wipe by the seat of my pants. That's express my... I write down a first draft as best as I can, and usually try to make it as good as possible. Then I run it by the beta readers. I have a couple of great beta readers, and I found out that beta readers are probably one of the most underappreciated part of the writing process. I just love them, beta readers, and I'm very thankful to them. And they come back with their comments and their feedback, so I incorporate that into the story or ignore it, depending on the situation. And then I end up with something that I like to call draft zero. So draft zero then goes to my editor, and I incorporate her feedback into the story, and then it's time for proofreading. So there are many steps involved until you end up with a polished book. But I found that if you don't go through all these steps, then there's no way that you can create a book that is better than a traditionally published one. Because I think with indie publishers and indie authors, what we need to do is outcompete traditional publishers. We don't need to write a book that's as good as a traditionally published book. We need to do something that's even better. Otherwise, you know, if you see a typo in a traditionally published book, you're going to go, okay, it's a typo. But if you see the same typo in an indie book, people are going to go like, well, some people are going to go like, of course, indie authors, what do you expect? It's just indie authors. And I hate that. I know that. You know, I hate that with a passion. So my aim is to write as good a book as possible and to make well, to have as few typos as possible in there. Writing copy is really good for that, because you learn to use tools like Grammarly, for example. So after the draft zero is Grammarly proofed anyway. So that's step two. I forgot to mention that.
Just putting your best work out there, because that, you know, it doesn't just, as you kind of mentioned here, it doesn't just represent the author, it represents the indie industry.
Exactly.
I've heard that where, well, indie books, they're not well edited or well written or whatever, and well, they're missing that because they're reading the wrong indie writers then, because there are some fantastic indie writers out there.
Oh, absolutely. Beam, you're one of them. I know that for sure, because I read your books.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We got to get you on again next week.
So, Nicholas, have you had some interactions with fans? Have you met some fans? Have you done any like public appearances or anything? Or do you get some fan mail or reviews that you like in particular? What are the fans saying about you?
I did get a lot of fans, and it's the best thing in the world. I just love those people. And most of them come to my blog, so I interact with them daily on the blog. You have to keep in mind that my children's books have been translated, have been published in Greek, actually. I have three books that have only been published in Greek by a Greek publisher. So I'm actually a hybrid author. I do have books traditionally published. That publisher arranges for things like school presentations, I suppose. Or you go to school and you talk about your book, and it's great. Or you can go to a bookstore, and it's great. And you get to meet a lot of the fans that way. But I wouldn't say that I have fans in the literal sense. I mean, they're not fanatics, but it's nice to see the same, some of the same faces every now and then. And I do know that some people love my books, and I love the fact that these people can be from all around the world. They don't have to be in Greece or in the States or Australia or what have you. And it's a wonderful feeling. I mean, I'm so grateful for the internet, for the world we live in, because right now, I'm talking to you guys, and you've read my books, and you visited my blog, and I have connection with you guys, and it's the best thing in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Being able to reach other people and make these connections, I just love this.
Cool. Well, we're going to run our last set of commercials here, and then when we come back, we'll talk to Nicholas C. Rossis about his books, of which he has a few.
Elena Dukani inherits her family's castle in Romania, a land dipped in myths, folklore, and the legendary Walking Dead. The local proverb serves as a warning. Do not speak badly of the devil, because you cannot know to whom you will belong. When she's attacked by an international assassin, only her deceased husband and her ex-boyfriend's live presence can protect her on her journey to the mountainous region of Transylvania. But that's not the only problem troubling Elena. Who is that boy invading her dreams? And what really happened to a priceless gem-crusted silver cross buried by an earthquake in the 15th century? Who's stalking Elena? Who wants her dead, and why? Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is a paranormal romantic thriller with a deep mystery and plenty of suspense. It'll haunt you in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Williscroft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they're coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
That commercial is a good example of how we use music and sound effects when we produce the audiobooks, and that's the music and sound effects in that audiobook for that book. And I want to remind you that the second book in the Oort Chronicle series is going into pre-sale about a week from now. So watch for that. If you haven't read Icicle yet, get your copy.
Indeed.
Okay, you know, the books found it very interesting. You know, Icicle, I can see a lot of influences from Gibson, from Neuromancer. And I'm always fascinated by how something that was written 40 years ago still has so many ideas in it that are contemporary. And, of course, Legacy of Danger. I almost took a job once in a village very close to the actual castle of Dracula in Transylvania.
Ooh.
So, yeah, in Romania. That would have been fun. It's a beautiful medieval village, as it happens. Very beautiful.
Hmm.
Brasov, it's called, isn't it? Well, like I said, almost moved there at some point.
So, Nicholas, we're looking at a sheet here of a whole bunch of book covers of yours. Let's kind of break this down a little bit into categories, starting with books that you've got out there that are targeted for writers, like copywriting and emotional beats.
Of course, Emotional Beats is actually my best-selling book. It sells a lot of copies each month compared to everything else.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So what's it about?
Emotional Beats, it has, you can think of it as a thesaurus, I suppose. It has examples of sentences and phrases that you can use to convey an emotion. So it's organized by emotion. So if you want to convey anger and you don't want to tell, you want to show. You can't say, you know, Nicholas was angry. Instead, you want to say, Nicholas tapped his fingers or tapped his foot or whatever. So you use a beat to convey that emotion. And it has collections of such beats that can make it so much easier. And it can give you the inspiration to find just the right beat for your own work. Hence the title, How to Convert Beats, How to Convert Your Writing into Palpable Feelings.
Wow, what an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's how to show, not tell, the easy way.
Yeah. Which,
that's a good thing.
You know, that concept has always seemed kind of obvious and easy to me, but I'm always amazed at how people don't quite grasp that sometimes. People who've done a lot of writing, too, and you got to kind of talk to them, and then that light goes on, and, oh, I get it now. You know, don't say you look nervous. Show him picking at an invisible thread on his pants and looking about the room.
Yeah. Convey it. Show the emotional beat of it.
Yeah. So are these the two books that you have for writers, that and copywriting, or are there more here that I'm not recognizing?
I think copywriting, I always meant to do a successor to Emotional Beat, but I never got around to that. So I said it's the first book in the series, but book two was never written. But speaking of, I was telling you about the sales before. This month I've sold 77 copies of Beats and some 20 copies of everything else. So that shows you how much interest there is for that particular book.
Wow.
It just needs to find its audience.
That's so true.
So which ones here then would be the children's books? Runaway Smile?
Oh, definitely. Musicville. And there are actually three more books that have been published in Greek, so I've never finished translating. Well, I finished translating them, but the illustrator never finished. Sorry for that. But the show never finished illustrating them and producing the book.
Okay. Now,
yeah, unfortunately, there's only these two at the moment in English.
Looking at these book covers, do you take a hands-on approach when it comes to your cover design, or do you hire somebody to do these covers for you?
I started doing them myself because I do have some experience in graphic design, but they were nowhere as good as when you have somebody dedicated doing book covers. So then I came across Alex Saskalidis. He's a Greek guy who does beautiful book covers, phenomenal book covers, and I've been using him ever since. So Alex has become a bit of a friend, and he has been illustrating all of my books since. The one, of course, with Rain Hall. Rain did all that. And Hellsmoor was also designed by April Gray, the one responsible for the compilation for the collection.
Well, these all look excellent. Do you have a favorite cover?
Ooh.
Oh, you love all your children the same.
Oh, yeah. I do love the Persia series that has the scales with the book on one hand and the dagger on the other. The book on one scale, the dagger on the other. And I love the concept that was used there. Like, you have the same symbol throughout the series. So I do love that one.
Now, we see you have some box sets here, too, that are available on Amazon. Exciting Destinies, what is that?
My collection of short books, short stories, everything that, every short story that I've written, about 30-something short stories.
Wow, that's a good collection. And then Perseus, that's a box set as well?
That's a box set as well that has the complete series, 5 books. And then there's a bundle that has everything I've written, like Perseus and the short stories in one, all in one. And the idea behind this is it's very hard to market a book because the profit margins are so low. So you have a book that probably sells for $2.99, and you have to spend, I don't know, at least a dollar or two, for sometimes a dollar per click on your ad, which means that basically everyone who clicks on your ad will have to buy the book.
Yeah, that's Amazon advertising that you're doing?
That's Amazon advertising I'm talking about, yeah. The cost per click is usually around 50 cents and can go up to $1 and even more depending on the keywords you use. So if you use a keyword that's very popular, like science fiction or fantasy, then you have to bid really high. So in order to be competitive and to make profit out of it, you have to have a title that's more expensive. But I always felt bad about charging more than $2.99 for my books. So even for Emotional Beats, it's $2.99. So what I did instead was offer added value in order to increase the price. So if I have one book, a short story collection that sells for $1.99, I sell the bundle that has all of them for, I think, $4.99.
$4.99.
And I sell, if the books sell $2.99 each and the bundle sells for $4.99, then I sell everything for $9.99. So that allows me to both increase the profit margin and at the same time, offer value to the reader.
Hmm.
So that's how the funds came to be.
Yeah. So then, except for the three that are traditionally published and in Greek, everything else, all of your books are self-published?
Yes. All the other books are self-published. Eastern Media, my company, has done publishing for other authors as well at times. So you won't find them. Yeah, you won't find them under my name, but I have published some things under Eastern Media, basically to help indie authors to make it easier for indie authors to go through the publishing process.
Yeah, most need some kind of help. Maybe they're great at this, but not so much at covers or whatever. But having those resources is terrific. Do you want to throw out a couple of names of other people that you've published? Give them a boost.
Yeah, sure. One is a Greek doctor, medicine, who published what I think is the definitive book on HPV, which is the papillomavirus. That's the name.
Mm-hmm. Papillomavirus, yeah.
Thank you. So that's nonfiction, as you can imagine, and answers pretty much, it's a huge FAQ that answers pretty much any question that you might have on the subject. And it's interesting because it has been receiving a lot of one-star reviews for the simple reason that it promotes the vaccine against HPV. So you find yourself stepping into these landmines, you don't even realize it. It's interesting.
People would give it one star just because they disagree? Huh.
Yeah.
That's too bad, because, I mean, you can disagree with something and respect the fact that it's a well-presented argument and good information.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nicholas, you've probably noticed that we're starting to emphasize book trailers a lot in what we're doing at Fresh Ink Group. How do you feel about book trailers? Do you think it's something people should be looking at, or maybe not as effective as they would hope?
I think they're increasingly effective. I think back when I started doing it, when I started publishing my books, that was 2014. I don't think they were that effective back then, but now I think they're indispensable. I can't imagine having a book without having a book trailer. It's just part of the book's online identity.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So do I. I you see it now as, you know, even just 5 years ago, it wasn't as widespread as what it is now. It's like somebody's got a new book out and you go and look for the trailer.
Yeah, and audiobooks are another rapidly expanding market. And it was very interesting to hear that you do audiobooks as well.
Yes, we do. Yeah, those are fun. The audiobooks are fun to put together. That's probably the most fun that I have doing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that we do with other authors, doing the audiobooks.
Right. Well, at some point I'd love to hear more about that. I still have to audiobook my books.
So are there any differences in trying to do your marketing from Greece as opposed to, like if you were in Europe or the U.S.? How do you compensate for having different access to the media?
That's a good question. I think everything is online nowadays, mostly. So the one thing that I can't do is go to the local library, which I could do in the States, or go to the local bookstore, which again I could do an event at a bookstore. But apart from that, everything else is pretty much the same, wherever you live in the world. And that's the beauty of the internet. Oh, I suppose the other thing you can't really do is go to any Comic-Con-like events and present your books. And I'm aware that there are many such events taking place that I don't have access to for simply geographical reasons. But I suppose that even if you live in the States, you would have to spend a lot of money moving to whatever, going to the place where the event took place.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're that accessible anyway. I think that most of us, especially indie writers, we don't have that big a marketing budget anyway to begin with. We're very constrained by that. So I think the internet is the best way forward for us.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Nicholas, going back to this doctor that you helped get published who wrote the book on HPV, did you want to mention his name? I don't think you mentioned his name. And was there other authors that you would help that you want to throw their names out?
Oh, yeah, sure. The other author that I've helped is a 14-year-old girl in the UK, and she wrote Hands, which is a beautiful book. I, when I first read it, I was like, okay, this can't be the case. It can't be a 14-year-old girl that wrote it. It's a beautiful story and beautifully narrated, and it was just awesome. We did have some editing. I did have some editing comments, of course, some back and forth. But I was not made to see that. As for the HPV doctor, his name is Alexander Mortakis. And his book is called Good News About Women and HPV.
Okay.
I literally think it's the definitive book for anyone struggling with any of these issues and or is worried about HPV. And I have yet to find a better book on Amazon about on the subject. which is not surprising because he's had some over 30 years of experience. He's one of the best doctors on best gynecologists in Greece.
Well, nothing beats experience.
That's very true, especially if you're a doctor.
Now, Nicholas, you've mentioned your blog. Beam and I are both big fans of your blog. We've been following that for as long as possible. And it's probably the most shared blog that I subscribe to as well, because you're always putting out good information for writers, which is why we invited you to be on G's Writer, too. G'sWriter.com. Listeners, if you want to go find Nick over there.
Which I'm clenching now because I know you always told me that, and I'm like, oh, I have to write something. Oh, I have to. I never did. I'm so sorry about that.
That's all right. But you write so much that we can keep reposting that stuff, and it's a valuable resource.
But, so grateful for that. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and you've become kind of like the unofficial Amazon expert too, because you know when Amazon is up to no good, which is pretty much 24/7. Yeah, it takes a lot to keep track of what's going on, the new changes, the new rules, how the algorithms have shifted and all that. So a lot of us rely on you to kind of keep up with that as well, too. So listeners, when we get to the end here, we're going to ask Nicholas where you can find that blog. Pay very close attention and subscribe. This is an excellent blog for writers.
Thank you so
indeed.
Much, guys.
Yes.
Amazon does get a lot of bad press, but we have to remember at the end of the day, they're out to make money. It's as simple as that. So it's in their interest to sell our products.
Yeah.
And they try to help with that as much as they can. But they also, at this point, I think that I was reading the number one at this stage is probably their online services, things like that's the number one profit-making segment of the company, their web space and all the services they offer to companies. Number two is probably the things that they're selling. And what was number three? Number two was their ads at this stage. And number three is the things that they're selling. It's something as big as that. So, you know, it's big money for them. They want us to use their ads, and that's created a bit of a problem lately. Because it used to be that you had, when you set up an Amazon ad, you were asked to set an amount of CPC, a cost per click, a bid. And you were bidding for a certain amount of money. And Amazon would say, okay, we're setting up your ad. What's the amount of money that you feel comfortable bidding with? Now, instead, what they do is they automatically add that number, and the number is usually higher than you had in mind. So then you have to go back to the ad and change that number. And unfortunately, a lot of people who are Amazon ads newbies, they don't go back to change that number. And as a result, all the ads have skyrocketed in expense, and it's become really hard to advertise with them. Having said that, Amazon are at the moment my number one marketing channel. It used to be Facebook until a few months ago, but for some reason, Facebook suddenly became very expensive to work with and didn't have quite as good a reach, probably because of all the thing with Apple. And then now Amazon is back to being my number one channel. So they get a lot of bad things, they do a lot of bad things, but at the end of the day, what they do works most of the time.
Mm-hmm. So before we wrap it up here, Nicholas, do you have any advice for up-and-coming authors and even the ones that have been out there for a while? Any advice for authors?
Sure. My advice would be don't give up. It's not going to be easy. Give your best. I mean, you really need to, like I said, not compete, not perform traditionally published books. And a lot of traditionally published books I see nowadays are worse edited than indie ones, and I feel very proud of that. If you were it's really bad at some. I had some examples in mind that are really bad in some cases. At the same time, I have authors, and they're seasoned authors too, and they are so keen on producing new material every other month that they don't really do any proper editing, especially any proper proofreading. And I, at some point, I read one of these, it's a guy I have in mind, I read one of his books, and I took the time to compile a huge list of typos. Basically, I proofread the whole thing for free. and sent me a huge email saying, okay, please fix these because you're a really good writer and you really deserve to be read by more people. And you're always complaining how not enough people read your books. But if you go into Amazon and you look at the reviews, they always complain about bad grammar and typos. So here is what I found. I read one of your books. It was a great book, but oh God, the typos. So here's a list of the typos, and I'm doing this as a favor to you. Please go there and fix them. And he got upset, and he never did change anything.
So, wow.
Yeah, so guys, please be humble, you know? Be humble.
Yeah.
It's one thing if somebody trashes your work and your beautiful words, but it's quite another thing when somebody's genuinely trying to help out. And please proofread. That's just Grammarly, the whole thing. It doesn't take that long, and it's a free tool. So just go there, chapter after chapter, put it in Grammarly and follow the suggestions when it makes sense to do so.
Yeah, make the effort, take pride.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they also need to learn to recognize a good resource as well. When you have somebody like Nicholas C. Ross is compiling a list for you, pay attention.
You took on, but thank you. Yeah.
So, Nicholas, how do people find you out there on social media, your handles, your tweets, your Twitters, your blog? How do they find you?
Number one place to find me is my blog, which I check daily. And I try to post as often as possible. It used to be every other day. Now it can be 3 to 4 days. But I love that blog, and I put my heart and soul in there. I have almost 1,500 articles there by now.
Wow.
So that's a lot of work has gone into that blog. You can also find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. But I'm most active on the blog. Twitter handle, Nicholas _ Rosses. That's Nicholas with a C-H, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S, _R-O-S-S-I-S. But I'm not very active there. So, again, please go to my blog and set. The moment you write there, or you leave a comment, I'm going to respond right away. If you go to Twitter and DM me or something, it may take a while to read that.
Right. So now, Facebook is also Nicholas Rosses, is how they would search for you?
Yes. If you search for Nicholas, again, C-H, and Rosses, R-O-S-S-I-S, you're going to find me there. The page is Nicholas C. Rosses. There's a scene there as well.
Okay, great.
And you can find me in a group, Nicholas Rosses. You can find me, like I said, various places. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, Goodreads, Discus, Pinterest, even on YouTube. I have a channel, but I never publish anything there. I'm most active on the blog.
Mm-hmm. And listeners, as always, with all of our guests, if you want to get a hold of them and haven't found a better way, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com. Send a note there, and we'll make sure that the author gets your message.
No, thanks for that. Awesome.
Nicholas?
Nicholas, by the way, is nicholasrossi.me, as in me.
.me, right. It's been a hoot having you on, Nicholas. Like I say, we've been looking forward to this for a long time. Listeners, check him out. Follow him. Check out his books. Find him on G's Writer. Become a fan. That's Nicholas C. Rosses, a terrific writer, children's book writer, sci-fi, fantasy, and a great resource for writers.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been so great being here, and I'm very thankful for it, again, in the spirit of the day.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking time out to speak with our listeners. So we appreciate that.
It's been a genuine pleasure. It was great catching up with you guys.
All right, listeners, next week we will have an encore presentation of former Alabama Country Music Hall of Fame star drummer Mark Herndon and his gospel country singing wife, Leah Seawright. So if you missed that the first time or you haven't caught it in the archive, we're going to have that on again in its entirety next week.
Yeah, it's a very popular episode. It's getting lots of listens in our archive too. So spread the word, tell your friends. And listen, people, it's holiday shopping season. Remember to get out there and support indie authors. Nothing makes a great gift like a book, especially one where you've taken the time and put some thought into picking out what you think the person that you care about would like to read. Check them out. Indie authors, holiday giving.
Yeah, and support those authors as well by spreading the word about the work, post reviews, and seek out the authors and follow them on social media. That every little bit helps.
Yep. Now, we don't know if you've heard, but we've got a YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group. Get over there and subscribe. Now, I watch that number all the time of the number of subscribers we have, and that number has not changed in like 3 weeks. So obviously their number counter must be broken. But as soon as they get that fixed, all these clicks that you people have been doing the last couple of weeks will show up. Get over there.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We are wishing you a very happy Thanksgiving here in the States, and we will see you again in a couple weeks.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks again, Nicholas.
Thanks, Nick.
It's been a pleasure, guys, and I'm actually on YouTube right now subscribing to your channel. So.
All right.
All right. Sure.
There's definitely something wrong with that.
All right. Thanks. See you soon, listeners.
Bye, everybody.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.